So please.
Thank you for your kind introduction. So I will be talking about the alignment of the electron beam and the annulators for the LCLS system. After an overview, I talk about tolerances, controls, monitoring, the alignment diagnostic system, and task scheduling. My collaborators are Paul Emmer, Catherine Lecoq, Georg Gastner, Franz Peters, and Robert Ruland, all working at SLAG. For those of you that don't know the linear coherent light source at SLAG, it's the SLAG campus close to Stanford. We use the last kilometer of the 3 kilometer long SLAG LINAC. The annulator goes here underneath this hill in the tunnel, newly built tunnel. Just to show you how many components we're talking about, I show this brief lineup. The annulator is actually broken down in 33 individual models that are placed with spaces in between that we call breaks. Here's the picture of the first prototype to give you an impression how these things look like. So a circular, about 3.4 meter long strong bag of titanium is used to house the keeper assembly for the magnets. This is a permanent magnet hybrid device based on neodymium iron boron with titanium vanadium permanganate poles. This is a cross section of the annulator. This is a little bit different from a regular planar annulator in that it's first of all a fixed gap device. So we don't intend to mechanically move anything in the annulator, but we have poles canted to each other with respect to each other at an angle of 4.5 milliradians. They're not planared. So this allows us, when we move this device with respect to the beam, then 1 millimeter shift corresponds to 4.5 micrometer in gap change or 8.2 Gauss in field change. So we can adjust the effective field to the desired value just by moving the device. And that is the plan. So we plan to set the device on a pair of horizontal slides and can then determine the field at the vacuum chamber at the pole center by moving the device forward and back. So this is done to fine adjust K. So this is just the movement from the center position to the furthest in position. And then we also can move the device all the way out. And in the all the way out position, there's basically no field, so we can turn off the annulator this way, and we can we'll be able to actually remove the segment from the supports without interfering with any of the other components. Now, a little bit about the requirements. For optimum SASA gain, we need overlap between the electron beam and the radiation field. And the overlap has to be fairly tight. It's about 20% of the RMS beam size. This means for the LCLS 74 micrometer RMS. And since we know that the RF field propagates in a straight line, the radiation field propagates in a straight line, so we have to put effort in to also keep the electron beam on a straight line. Of course, if you have arrow fields, the electron beam will be deflected, so we have to work on this to get the arrow field out. But besides the overlap control, we also need phase control. We need to avoid phase shake. And the tolerance for that we worked out to be about plus minus 10 degrees of optical phase, which at 1.5 angstrom means that the particle needs to be at the correct position as it travels through the annulator to plus minus 4.2 picometers. This will be done through undulator tuning at first and then through beam steering. And beam steering requires that we actually keep this beam straight, at least over a couple of gain lengths, so roughly 10 meters, to Estrella and to 2 micrometer RMLs. And then the other criterion is K control. We need to keep the average phase under control. We will do that also by annulator tuning, and then by keeping the electron beam close to the center of the annulator. As you know, in a planar annulator, the magnetic field has a minimum in the vertical on-axis when increases towards the poles. And since we have our annulator canted, we also introduce a slight dependence on the X position. So we need to make sure that we stay close to the axis. The alignment task has to focus on the quadrupoles and the annulators. The quadrupoles require tighter controls. Any misalignment of the quadrupoles will steer the beam. So it's necessary to align the quadrupoles to a straight line over a long distance in order to achieve the goal to get the electron beam on a straight line. And there are going to be precise goal positions for each quadrupole, and we need to keep the quadrupoles at this post position to 1 micrometer or less. This cannot be done with conventional alignment, so we need beam-based alignment to do that, and we worked out an algorithm for that many years ago already, and we rely on this. Then for the segments, as I already said, misalignment will change the K because the field is dependent on transverse position. The tolerances are 80 micrometer RMS in the vertical and 140 micrometer RMS in the horizontal. There's no really real effect on steering, so it's really not easily detectable. It just will, if you have tolerance deviation of all the annulators somehow, you will get a reduction in gain. So we try to figure out how to address it best, and we came out the best is to mount the annulators together with on either side with a beam position sensitive device on a common girder, and fiducialize these components ahead of time, and then measure the position of the beam with these components. And I will talk about this more. So this slide goes about the our solution towards the requirement for quadrupole alignment. We will mount the quadrupoles on remotely controlled supports. It turns out we will put them on the same girder with undulator and others, and I'll show that later. But the first goal is to move the quadrupoles remotely. And so we use the off-axis field of the quadrupoles for steering. Then we use beam-based alignment with different energies, spanning the entire operational range at 4.3 GeV, 6.2 and 13.6 GeV to detect and cancel the error fields along the annulator line. We basically remove the dispersion from the line. So if the trajectory does not depend on the energy, it's the same for all energies, that means the trajectory has to be straight. We use RF cavity BPMs to detect the energy dependence, and we move the quadrupole transversely to minimize the effect. So the net result would be that we align the quadrupoles in the process automatically. We developed an algorithm and tested it in simulations and found it works. We need typically three iterations of the procedure to saturate, converge satisfactorily. We could do more if we need to. So it's very important that we believe that we really have to rely on beam-based alignment. It's essential for achieving X-ray AVL gain. So the solution for the segment alignment is that we install beam position, and I already said that earlier, beam position sensing elements with absolute readout capability on either end of the segment. For the downstream end, we have already had a quadrupole, so we decided to use that. We can detect the beam position back to the center of the quadrupole by changing the gradient. We have electromagnetic quadrupoles. For the upstream end, we put a new device in, we call beam finder wire. I will talk about that a little bit more. All three of these components, the beam finder wire, the undulator segment, the quadrupole, will be fiducialized. That means that we measure the distance between the magnetic axis or the wires with respect to tuning bolts, so that we do that on a CMM micron level accuracy. Then the girders will be moved with beam-based alignment to correct the quadrupole position to achieve the required kick, remove mostly we remove the initial kickoff course. That's the main action, and we will use some residual kick to correct for the other field errors that don't come from the quadrupole. At the same time, we align the downstream end of the undulator segment. The other end will be segment will be removed by bringing the beam finder wires in collision with the beam, and we call this end the loose end. So we call talk about loose end alignment occasionally. Here's a picture design of the girder, which has most of the components pointed out. So we have the strong back. You saw that it's I showed this prototype picture. It's the same. This is a titanium strong back. It's mounted on this green structure. This looks like a board. That's the girder. And here's a quadrupole. It's also mounted on the girder, and the BPM is here, also mounted, and then the beam finder via the device on the other side. The girder is held by five cam movers. It's camshaft movers. Two of them can be seen here. And they are sitting on pedestal on fixed supports that are sand-filled and are thermally insulated to reduce expansion and the temperature changes. Horizontal slides are not visible. They are here and here to move the strong bag in this direction for the purposes I told you. In addition, there is elements that I'll talk about later. This is our alignment diagnostic system. These are the two tubes that carry a wire. Unfortunately, there's some pieces missing. The tubes are, of course, continuous. And there's the wire position monitors on this location that are separated by from the tube, wire-carrying tube by bellows. So they can be moved. They will move with the girder independently. And they work like electron BPMs. They sense the RF field traveling along the wire. Then we have a water pipe running along the system that connects to four sensors of our hydrostatic leveling system, HLS, that will allow us to monitor the movement. Both systems allow them monitoring the girder movements to high position in 5 degrees of freedom. They move. They operate along the entire length of all 40 annulators. So they stretch 140 meters and include even two BPMs upstream of the first annulator that are used to control the launch angle and positions of the electron beam coming in. Here's a little picture of the beam finder wire device. It's basically, it looks complicated, but all it does is it presents a chamber with two wires that don't touch each other, but are 90 degrees to each other that can be brought in collision with the beam, or a replacement vacuum chamber. This device is not designed to actually scan the beam by itself. It just is designed to allow us to either not have anything interfering with the beam or put a wire in a repeatable, very precisely repeatable position so that we can use it to measure where the beam is with respect to the annulator magnetic axis. So basically the idea for using it is that doing beam-based alignment, we will align the quadrupole on a straight line, but the other end may not be aligned because it's hard to detect. So what we do is we move the girder move the wire through the beam, and then we can bring it kind of in collision. And so this will align the entire system. We, of course, try to pivot this motion around the quadrupole position. That can be done by computer control. So here's a list of critical alignments. Oops. As I said, we will need the electron beam straightness to 2 micron RMS. This requires the position of the quadrupole in horizontal and vertical direction to be plus minus 2 micron range. And of course, if you want to control, which we do want, control the position with the BPMs, this is true for the BPMs as well. And this is especially important during one procedure of beam-based alignment, where we need this stability without help, or without feedback correction. And, this all has to be looked at in the presence of a ground motion. We expect there's going to be an average ground motion continuously about 1 micron per day, which will misalign the system, so we have to fight this. Then the other important thing that we have to realize is that beam-based alignment really demagnifies the tolerance requirements for conventional alignment by two orders of magnitude, so that the requirements for aligning the quadruples to a straight line initially is in the order of 100 micron RMS, which is achievable. Here's a summary of all the controls we have on the system. We have manual adjustable controls and remotely adjustable controls. Manual are the, we can adjust the camshafts relative to the pedestals with in the order of 25 micron range vertical, 12 micron range horizontal in X and Z. Then for the quadrupole, the beam finder wire, the BPM, the vacuum chamber, we can align relative to the segment with about 1 micron range. And then for the remotely adjustable controls, we have the girder controls. We can control X, Y pitch, yaw, and roll to equivalently plus minus 1 millimeter in X and Y at both ends of the girder. And then we have, of course, the annulator X on the horizontal slides, where we can move the annulator up to 80 micron or very precisely in small motions around the center of the annulator. In summary of alignment monitors, I already mentioned, and I will tell you more about the hydrostatic leveling system we call HLS and the wire position monitoring system we call WPM. We also have temperature sensors which support the ADS readout correction and allow us to calculate temperature-dependent K errors that we can then correct by adjusting the X position of the undulator. And it will help us to interpret more component motion that we might detect. We, of course, have the BPMs, the beam position monitors, that will allow us to detect X and Y positions of the electron beam. And, of course, if they would be moving, that would not help us. So we will, of course, monitor their position with the ADS and then correct the offset that we use to actually extract the real X and Y position from the numbers we get from the ADS. And the quadrupoles, occasionally we use them also to measure the distance of the beam from the center and use as extra diagnostics elements. Here's a little bit, a few words about the ADS. We have the, as I said, the wire position monitor system. There's 240 meter long wires running along the system. And for the hydrostatic leveling system, HLS, we have four monitors on the four corners of the girder and a water system half pipe running along the entire 140 meters. The resolution we tested and show that in the next slide is amazingly good. It's better than 100 nanometers. And there's a fairly good range of 1.5 millimeters. And they will be permanently available. We don't expect any interruptions. For the hydrostatic leveling system, there are capacitive sensors. This here is basically a diagram. There's a user half-filled pipe. This is a water level. That is the pipe diameter. This basically measures the capacitance of this gap. And they are common, well-tested and well-used. So we use three of them. And then they have a position that is in the order of a micron, a little bit better, so not quite as good as this. And they have an instrument drift in the order of 1 to 2 micron per month, which might be a little bit of a problem. But we have a new development, the ultrasound sensor, which have a position is very good, better than 100 nanometers. It's comparable to the wire position system, but and has potentially no instrument drifts because it is self-calibrating. It has reference surfaces and measures not only the time it takes from for the sound wave to reflect from the water surface, but also from the reference surface, which are known, have known distances. But this is a little bit sensitive to motion of the sensors or the water pipe, and if motions happen, we have to wait 10 minutes for them to settle down. And if they are detected, the system will be set up that these measurements will be suppressed for 10 minutes, and then we only rely during that time on the wire position system. Here's a measurements from a setup we did in SLEC, this Linux Sector 10. There's an area where we have a possibility to do these measurements. So we have here two pipes with wires running in them, and they are shorter than the ones we are planning to have for the LCLS. But it gives an impression what the system can do. Here, this is an 8-hour period, and this graph, the red, shows the temperature change during that time. I think it's mostly due to air conditioning action. It goes 0.7 Kelvin amplitude, and here's a reading of the wire motion. The two boxes span 1 micrometer, so you see how well they lie on a smooth line. So it gives you an impression how you see this. I guess this distance is about 100 nanometers. So it seems to be significantly better than 100 nanometer resolution. Just a summary about controlling Godard motion. We think that Godard motion is will be caused by ground motion, temperature changes in the tunnel. Even though the temperature control and tolerance is fairly tight, it's plus minus 0.5 degrees centigrade, there will be an effect. And then, of course, if there's some chem rotation, this will be detected directly through the alignment diagnostic system, as I've described before, and then indirectly due to the impact of on the electron beam trajectory, as detected by the BPMs. And we tend to correct Godard positions frequently by correcting it by chem movers. So the moment we plan that whenever it detects like half a micron error, we would apply a change. We hope we have to do that not more often than like twice a day. So it's a very slow kind of feedback system. So here's a kind of logic diagram of the tasks that are involved in doing the alignment and keeping the alignment. There are two venues, the magnet measurement facility, this is a block, and then the undulator hall is this block. I also have a box here that shows the It shows the involvement of diagnostics component. So we start in the MMF by tuning the segments and then fiducializing them, the quadrupoles and the beam finder wire. Then we align the components on the girder, and check the alignment on a specially designed big magnetic coronal measurement machine, and then we will take the segment out, store them separately, and get the girders ready for installation. In the undulator hall, we will install the supports and align them, and then we take the girders and install them on the on these supports and pre-align them. Then we will plan to do an environmental field measurement to see how much the Earth's magnetic field is modified by all the ferrite components have been put in the tunnel, including the supports and the rebars and the concrete. And then we will install the ADS system. From then on, basically, we plan to have the ADS, we will commission it immediately because it does not need any beam to run and operate. We will run continuously during all operation. And we will then take the segments and install them on top of the slides on the girder, and then align them. And we use the ADS system to aid the alignments by controlling the motion that we do. We also use the chem shafts to do initiate the motion, to do the motion. And we plan on using also a short version, a portable version of a HLS and the WPM system to aid the alignment to fairly high precision. You think there's possibilities to get at least in a vertical in the order of 30 to 40 microns along the entire 140 meters of the annulator line. Then we commission the beam and get the beams through the annulator system, and eventually we will do beam-based alignment. And then, of course, it's based on the BPMs and the quadrupoles, and then we will do the loose end alignment, as I described earlier. At that point, the electron beam should be on a straight line. So we will then record the readings of the ADS, where the components are at that point. And from then on, we will keep the components at this position, and also do a continuous feedback system of the offset corrected BPM, so keep the electron beam at the same BPM reading that we had at the end of the beam-based alignment. We hope and we think that should keep the system up for the order of 2, maybe 4 weeks. And without any invasive correction. So the first invasive correction after 2 to 4 weeks, where we would loop back to the electron beam-based alignment. Maybe one iteration is required at that point. Initially, we think we need 3, and then we would loop here. At the beginning, we plan that every 3 months, we swap out 3 annulator segments, but taking them really out of the girders and moving them in the MMF bag and putting them on a tuning bench and checking their magnetic field distribution, see if they have any damage from radiation and so forth. We have 6 replacement annulators standing by that we have tuned ahead of time for the target location, and we put them back in place and do beam misalignment and go back. When we install the replacements, we don't need to do any girder alignment or loose end alignment, because we designed the annulator so that they are replaceable on the girder without alignment necessary. We have custom-sized shims bolted under each annulator segment so that the bottom of the shims has, for all annulators, the same height to the magnetic axis. This is done after the tuning of the annulator has been finished and the height is determined during tuning. Once every 6 months, we think that the cams, due to continuous ground motion, may have run out of range, and we will have an excess and will rearrange the cams by adjusting the manual adjustment on top of the pedestals. Coming to the conclusions, I showed that the X-ray AVL puts very tight tolerances on magnetic field quality, electron beam straightness, and segment alignment. These tolerances can be achieved through beam-based alignment based on BPMs and quadrupoles. It's necessary that this includes scanning beam energy. BPMs, quadrupoles, and annulator segments will be kept aligned relative to each other in the presence of ground motion through common girder mounting. The main tasks of the conventional alignments are then only component fiducialization and alignment on girders and conventional alignment of girders in the annulator hall as a prerequisite for beam-based alignment. The alignment diagnostic system measures and enables the correction of girder movements due to ground motion and temperature changes. I think I showed that a strategy is in place for the LCLS to establish and maintain the straight electron beam trajectory required to achieve AVL gain on X-ray at X-ray wavelengths. Thank you very much.
Thank you for this presentation, which shows what it means to set up an align and undulator system for an XFL. Are there questions? Yeah.
Thank you. You showed the system where you move your undulator horizontally for fine-tuning of the K value.
Right.
And how far do you rely on the system to get lasing, or is that a feature for afterwards?
We're going to measure the K value as function of X, and we think we can do that very reliable, and we can very precisely see that. So it's actually, we can rely on this. The only problem we have is that the we have a hard time getting the field integrals sufficiently controlled over the entire range that we would like to scan. We also have an alternate method of measure K to verify that we actually are where we want, and that is being presented by Jim Welch at the end of this session. We actually decided recently to make a more conservative approach and basically tune every annulator. Originally, we wanted to tune all the annulators the same way and just rely on the X motion. Now we want to start with deciding which annulator should have which K for the tapering requirements, and we go for the 1.5 angstrom target, and then basically make the K value on the center of the annulator correct for this goal, and then we can use the motion basically to deviate from it if you want to or need to, but we would be able to basically have a compensated field integral and a known K value at a known location.
More questions?
Have you estimated the time it will take for the beam-based alignment for the quadrupoles?
Is it more hours or days?
Well, it's going to be take longer at the beginning when we have to. The hardest part, we believe, is to get to understand how to set up, change the Linac energy and reproduce the beam position at the entrance BPMs to micron position. So at the beginning, it takes a day or a few days, and we believe that at the end, when this is routine, we should be able to just dial in these settings of the quadrupoles and whatever of the optics coming before the annulator. So one iteration should take an hour. We should not need more than three iterations, so 3 to 4 hours at the most. Hopefully at the end, just one iteration if you just need to have a touch-up to correct this.
More questions? If not, let's thank the speaker again.